Absolutely. And up next, we talk about the WebBot technology. Just what is it? What does it do? How does it predict the future? George Ure and Cliff Hyde join us in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. WebBot technology, predicting the future, but how does it work? Let me introduce two very special guests. George Ure, business consultant, financial writer, publishing www.urbansurvival.com, independencejournal.com, peoplenomics.com. He's been a senior vice president of an international airline, a vocational school president. He had a two-year sales and marketing assignment for a major software company. And this website, urbansurvival.com, focuses on long-wave economics. He also has another one out called halfpasthuman.com. Here's George Ure. George, welcome back. How are you?
Pretty good, George. How are you?
Good. All is well. Let's bring in Cliff High as well. Cliff has a patent on a computer-assisted reading technology, which allows reading from computer screens at up to 2,000 words per minute, reaching into other areas of hidden potential within language used by humans. Now, he's been developing a system of software internet agents. They're like search engines use and other proprietary processing methods to predict future events. We're going to talk about the past and the present events from the WebBot technology. The software project began in 1997. Here's Cliff High. Hey, Cliff, welcome back as well.
How are you doing, sir?
Good. All is well. George, let's pick up again. New listeners, many new listeners probably saying, what the heck is WebBot technology? Want to explain that for us?
Well, very briefly, I was happily writing my website in 2001 in, May-June timeframe of 2001. Got an email from a fellow who wrote some very interesting words about a large tipping point that was just ahead on the horizon. And it was really strange because he admitted to being a software engineer and having done a lot of work in spider technology and using similar technology to what the search engines use to go out and sniff out new content on the web. And he sent me a long description, which I published on the Urban Survival website. And in it was predicted a tipping point after which life would never be the same. It would have aspects of military and accident. There were some geographical descriptors, which included a cloud of language over, strangely enough, Las Vegas at about the time when the 9/11 perps were found to be out there. And I thought, well, this is really interesting. And then my wife and I were living on our sailboat in San Francisco, and we woke up the morning of 9/11 on the boat, turned on CNN, and, oh, no, this is what a tipping point is. And so all of a sudden I got real serious about, okay, who's this guy? Where's he pulling this stuff off the internet, and how's he getting there? And we've been holding these conversations, and Cliff has done amazing work over the past 10 years publicly, but he actually had used, what, Cliff, picking Microsoft's high?
Yes, but that was mere self-defense. I mean, we all think something was going to happen, man. But that's the only time, I mean, I can safely say that's really the only time I ever used the technology for personal gain.
Or preventing personal loss.
That was really more it, yeah, yeah. Just before the crash, I was able to determine from running a small amount of the normal size run that things were a bit wonky and it was time to get out of the market. I think I was out at a few days before it all really went south, and I was within a few points of Microsoft's all-time high. That was the only stock I had, and I had probably 44 shares. So it wasn't like there was a huge amount at risk, but it meant a lot to me at the time.
And the software scans specific words. Do you have to program it to search for something?
Actually, I program in that level of it is done in a language called Prolog, which is a developed, it actually means programming and logic, and it allows you to develop these things called predicates, which are little statements that allow it to evaluate on its own. So to a certain extent, the list is indeed populated, but it's not like anymore I actually sit there and do it. It's pretty much automated.
Okay, now, George, tell me, you know, when you look at specific topics, Do you have to go into the programming and say economy or wars, or does it spit things out that seem to be unusual, and then you're able to find it?
My involvement with a project is more as a sounding board. I have we deliberately keep the project cellular, and one of the reasons we do that is we're very concerned about the security of this stuff. It lives on Cliff's servers, not mine. And we'll kick around a lot of concept, a lot of idea stuff, but when it comes down to anything having to do with the first pass through the data, throwing it up in model space and so forth, that's Cliff's bailiwick. I don't want to know that because, as I guess you could figure out, those who know this kind of stuff have value. I mean, there's a danger of being a messenger and being too right too often.
I want to talk a lot about your recent reports, and we're going to look at things that are happening in the future and give our listeners news they can truly use. But let's talk, because back in, I think it was October of last year, you were both mentioning a crisis with Israel and Iran. I haven't seen it happen yet, and also the swine flu. You thought that was going to really get out of control. Can we say at this point that you were wrong on that front, or what?
The Israeli thing won't pop off. Insofar as we can tell, there's no what we call release language that would support the idea of an attack now. The only conceivable situation that we can see, given the mathematics involved with our particular method, would be as if the attack actually occurred in such a way that there was no release. In other words, it would have to have the components of an unexploded bomb or something, where after an attack there was no, it's all over. Rather, everybody would still be really tense. We have this incredible building of building tension that goes up until July, and then we have a plateau that holds at about a 2 to 3% grade until November 8th. And November 8th through 11th is a tipping point, but that would look to be a lot larger than an Israeli attack. So I actually don't think the Israelis are going to go attack the Iranians, or ourselves are going to go attack the Iranians this year, certainly.
One of the things, George, that's difficult about looking into the future with language is that, take the H1N1, the headlines, the emotional value, the people freaking out, getting in lines, the all the government hype, and as you noted, the throwing away the 70 million doses of vaccine now.
Yeah.
Right.
Gotta toss it out.
Yeah, it really does. But you see, when you look into the future of language, you can't really tell if it's real, in other words, you know, thousands of people dying, or if it's a headline or a meme from the future that thousands of people may die, because those little words, you know, the conditionals like may or the hype could, those kinds of things get lost. What the technology is extremely good at is picking out topics well ahead of time that are likely. For example,
well, George, let me intrude right here. And address the swine flu issue, especially relative to the Olympics. Because you're quite correct. At an archetype level, we were 100% correct, because there was an outbreak, if you will, of disease at that period of time, but it had nothing at all to do with swine flu, and that's where we screwed up. Rather, the outbreak of disease was in the processing of the supporting chemicals for the fast food industry, and they had that major recall and the threat of everybody getting salmonella. So there was a lot of headlines relative to disease that broke out at the appropriate time. I was just, my monkey mind was wrong in assigning it a value relative to the H1 flu issue.
Okay. And you both seem to be right on with the economy.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Yes, I don't like that at all. Yeah.
I mean, that's why we're both, you know, actively promoting among our personal circle of friends. We're kind of recluse type guys, but those three or four people we know, we're urging to put gardens in and so forth. And by the way, speaking of which, there may be a hidden, not even especially hidden message. You see where Michelle Obama is again expanding the size of the garden at the White House.
Yes.
And so when the linguistics point to, you know, massive, massive food shortages because of weather later this year and things like that, we got to look at the linguistics and say, well, is it going to be headlines, food shortage could happen? Or one of the runs a couple of years back talked about the fungus among us. And not only did we have a killer fungus show up in the Northwest, but we've now got this UGG 99 rust that's starting
in the
to
wheat.
The wheat. And the problem is that's one of those creeping out, you know, it's not making big headlines because the mainstream media is not in the trend business. They're in the, you know, hold the mirror up today, are you ugly or are you beautiful today kind of thing. The linguistics looking forward are really designed to look over there when you get to this point in the future and then look over in that direction. It's sort of a large guidepost system.
Well, it could be actually quite specific, and we even can reference, and I'll shut up and let you do it, George, because you had more contact there. But look at the specifics we had with the Coast to Coast staff specifically, and those particular bits of linguistics we were correct about, what, 6-8 months out?
Yeah, I don't know if Lisa told you at the time, George, but I had mentioned to her, and I think we even mentioned it to George Knapp, that you guys were going to go mainstream. And that Coast to Coast cooking show plans aside.
yeah.
That's right. You didn't see that coming, did you?
No.
and I thought, well, that's very correct. I mean, the marketing guys know everybody eats, and they're being sensitive to vegans by not calling it roast and toast, which would have been my choice. But anyway, where were we?
The linguistics around going mainstream and all of the effects.
And then so you guys end up on Nightline, and I don't know how much more mainstream you can be. But you see, the whole, there's a huge... The mainstreaming of this, how would we describe Coast to Coast?
Well, let's put it this way. From my viewpoint in terms of massaging the data, Coast to Coast is a linear object. The amount of data clustered around that particular context of all the people that work there and the effect it has on the planet is in our particular model set, it's a vertical structure. Disease, on the other hand, is this huge pyramid that's very, very wide at the bottom. And so when I'm peering through it, I know we're going to have a disease outbreak, and it's like anybody's guess as to what it's going to be at the moment. But when I'm looking at the coast-to-coast kind of data, I'm looking straight down, and I get to see a very clear view. That's why we were much more correct with that than we were with the H1 outbreak relative to the Olympics.
And your outlook, by the way, apparently, when's your next big jump up?
Well, that's when all of the Wujo goes, and we get that paradigm shift, and that's in the plateau period around July 8th and onward.
Right. So over the course of summer, George, autograph seekers lining up, more TV stuff. That's the kind of thing. Maybe a new book. We don't know what the events are, but we just know that linguistically, you guys are hot.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. In South America, you talked about an incredible story that in the summer of 2010, a video crew will interview an escapee from an internment facility after mass UFO sightings, and apparently this very young, bald man will later be revealed to be a non-Terran human. I like that.
So do I. I'm waiting for that one.
Now, that's an incredible story.
The language around that was not necessarily that he was young and bald, but was wizened, and it's a kind of a curious word, and that indeed is how I think of it, is perhaps young and bald or something along those lines. But there's a lot of slack in the language there, yes.
Webmaster Lex Lonehood, by the way, interviewed Cliff, a very lengthy article, After Dark article, in the January issue this year of the After Dark News magazine, and he enjoyed himself. Cliff, with that interview. He's very thorough, isn't he?
Oh, yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. Repeated conversations. Now, what do you mean by that? Yes.
Yeah. He's that way. Now, I notice in your most recent work that you don't talk about certain specifics of the future. You talk about the markets, for example, fading in importance you seem to be changing a little bit. Why is that?
There's some specific conditions that exist from 2010 onward that I didn't want to amplify any trends at all within certain areas because of the potential that I might not get it right ahead of time and might create a, if you will, a linguistically built-in barrier in people's minds that wouldn't allow a natural flow of events. Bear in mind, we don't know what we're doing here. And if we get out there and we set up something that ends up being a self-fulfilling prophecy because it's centered around a particular set of words, but we're off in it in terms of where it actually should have been focused, then we're not really harmonizing with the universe so much as providing a distraction or a disturbance that really didn't need to exist there. So I guide myself with this by writing. In the writing, I ask myself continuously the same kind of questions that the Buddhists ask themselves, and that is, why are you putting this energy out in the universe? And so I'll stop and examine. And there are a couple of areas where I did not feel comfortable in putting it out, so I censored myself this time. And some of the areas are going to become very obvious. In fact, one of them we can discuss now, and that's the whole idea of silver and its cousin gold in terms of the precious metals. Because I was absolutely incorrect in when it was going to occur, and I was 100%, in fact, probably very conservative in what will occur relative to silver and relatively shortly. And we're starting to see some of the linguistics appear now that suggest that we're very correct with that.
Can we assume that we're definitely not out of the woods economically and that it could get even worse?
Oh, I would suggest that that's a huge solid rock upon which we can walk, yes, indeed, that you've got to assume hardship exists now and at least through to 2013.
There are some fundamental problems, George. One of the problems is that the Western economic paradigm is a marvelous instrument, provided you have untamed continent, wide open spaces, unlimited resources, print all the so-called money you want, back it up with some gold and silver. Good time was had by all.
And consumers who buy,
absolutely. Yeah. The problem is we're hitting the wall, and you've had Gerald Celente on. He looks at trends a little more numerically and differently than we do. But if you listen to what Gerald Steph's saying, you know, it's the same thing. The economy is hitting the wall. It's hitting the wall in slow motion. They're doing everything to slow us down to 25 instead of hitting it 60, but we're still hitting a wall. We hit a wall in 1929, and we hit the wall very fast because in 1929, when the banks fell apart, people did not have FDIC, and so the losses were immediate and personal. Now we've got FDIC. Now we have some degree of mortgage relief. We don't have the immediacy of the foreclosures. Instead, it's being spread out over 10, 15, and perhaps 20 years. So we'll hit the wall slow, but we're seeing in the jobless numbers, and one of the reasons I'm staying up all night is I can hardly wait because just, 6 hours from now, the Labor Department's going to come out with a report, and it'll be very interesting to see where they report the unemployment rate at. I'm guessing they'll come in again with a 9.6 to 9.8 kind of range, even though the ADP report, which came out earlier this week, said, oops, the economy dropped another 23,000 jobs. So, I mean, in terms of the economy, we haven't even got to the commercial real estate failures. That stuff is still out there in the wings. And that's not to be negative. That's not to give any aid and comfort to enemies of America. That's just the way the numbers work out. People don't have new gotta-have-it items. And that's what really drives economic growth.
Yes, that is absolutely true.
How many big screen TVs do you have? I mean, I'm sitting here looking at four 24-inch monitors in my office, and they're driven by, you know, dual video cards and supercomputer. It's like, okay, how do I improve on that? Where's the next gotta have it?
Well, and they're going to try to get us to buy 3D TV sets. I don't think that's going to work, but they're doing whatever they can to create new market share. We'll be back in a moment with the WebBot technology guys, George Ure and Cliff High on Coast to Coast AM. Now, we're going to save the last hour for you for questions with the WebBot guys, George Ure and Cliff High. But over the next hour and a half or so, more questions about just some of the things that they see through this incredible software program in the future. George and Cliff, you talk about in the discussions of markets, you hint at major weather events to come this year. And you know what? That is probably right on the button. But how does the software know about like a future weather trend? How does it find that?
It's not really the software that knows, first off. It's humans, because humans are psychic. And to some degree, they're always have their antenna attuned to what's going on. And we're continuously making predictions about what's going to occur in our days, usually. You know, will the coffee be hot enough and that kind of thing. But it's always out there and sort of flowing through, and it sort of leaks into the language. And basically what we do is we have a numeric value system that's assigned to various kind of words, and we've got well over a million words now that have been gone through and had the value system assigned to them. And as we encounter these words on the Internet, we see what's changed from the last time we were visiting this area, so to speak. And so we examine the change from week to week, month to month, that sort of a deal, in particular areas of discussion, because our usual day-to-day language is so regular, it's so routine. In a standard English speaking environment in the U.S., you might use 11,000 words more or less in the course of a year and restrict yourself to an astonishing 1,800 words as the basis for your vocabulary in any given week. And so when it starts changing, that's when we pay attention.
And we've already seen the change. The report came out, I think it was on the 11th of March. Yes. And just here this last week, we've seen the first of what may be several events where a weather system just parks itself, unzip and rains all over a certain area. In this case, it happens to be, you know, Rhode Island and down around Providence.
Well, let's not forget us. I mean, we've had terrific rains the last few days, and we've got a high wind warning that's going to be in effect all day tomorrow.
So up in the Northwest, they're having some problems too. But nothing compared to the language that seems to be coming later in the summer, where whatever the weather is yet to come this spring will become a major economic driver, and whether it's because commodity prices will go through the roof or because fields won't get planted, whatever the specific mechanism is, there appears to be a lot of focus around that, and it leaks through, in just bizarre ways. Cliff?
Well, yeah, say, for instance, you've got some people, you know, their gender is immaterial, and they're sitting there typing in the pie forum or the bread baking forum. There's a couple of really good bread baking forums out there, and I happen to know of one. I go and I read it, and I'm seeing that so-and-so, a regular contributor, their language has shifted slightly, and now they're worried, you know, openly discussing, for instance, their concern over the rising price of flour.
Okay. All right.
That kind of thing would be picked up in a conscious, as a conscious expression of a worry within our software, and it is those kind of things that drive what we call the serendipity versus the discipline approach. If I say, let's do a discipline run, then we're out after specific keywords. However, if I say, let's do a serendipitous run, and anything that crosses this emotional threshold of X, I want to know about, and oh, by the way, grab a bunch of text around it, and that's how we sort of go from.
And then when you have that discussion of the flour prices and it comes concurrent with a bunch of other language and other fora that are talking about precip, rain, and those kinds of things
running
through at the same time, then in the model space you can kind of correlate. It's like, we see rain talk picking up. We see concerns about bread baking. And over here we see about grains.
And then we see that the language itself is concentrating in a shorter-term value set that has an effectiveness out next 3 months, and then we can start assigning temporal values as to when this is likely to occur, and there you go.
And then you can see the market peaking, and then when those grain prices come along, we further out see things like inflation, hyperinflation coming down the road, which is very hard on financial markets, but you can get kind of a sense of how pushing on one part of the big balloon makes all the other parts pop out, but only in their turn.
In a simple way, we get calls, for example, from truck drivers And they may say, and this, I'm just saying this, they may say, you know, we can't get the milk delivered like we used to. You know, there's a shortage of milk. We can't get to it. And one then might construe, hey, you know, the price of milk's going to go up.
Exactly.
And lo and yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Well, we also keep track in the software itself, the number of occurrences of the word shortage relative, because that itself is a loaded word and has a fear component to it. And then we keep track of emotional variables all around it. And as the numeric sum of those emotional values rise up, then we pay more attention to it and drill in on it and so forth.
Let's talk a little bit more about this current report. What does the rest of this year look like?
Oh, boy.
Sounds like where the draft question. Comes back, or you mean where we run out of food, or where we have the revolution rebellion? Or, which,
yeah.
Which
or all part? Of the above.
Well,
all of
well,
the
there's,
above,
there's
right?
some good areas in the sense that we don't really see any potential for an exchange, a warfare exchange in a real serious way between Israel and Iran, at least up until November 8th or so. So we can all sort of breathe a sigh of relief there. Whatever wars we've got going on there are the only ones we're going to have to deal with at the moment.
Well, wait a minute. Wait a minute. Not quite. There's a chance that it could occur around as part of the July 8th we have.
I still maintain that we would see a larger level of release than what we're seeing.
Yeah, agreed. Agreed. But it's a sawtooth. And so, what, you know, we
it's possible, yes. Let's say a very low order probability.
Yeah, low order probability. But if that's the case, then November turns into global thermonuclear end of the game.
Or something that the powers that be would certainly engineer towards that, I would agree.
Yeah.
Because we have a curious situation here. When George, Ure, and I first got together in 2001, it was because of a tipping point. And right at the moment, we stand relative to another tipping point coming in November that we see last 4 days. The tipping point will begin in the morning of the 8th and continue all the way through until the evening of the 11th relative to our data. And then we slip into a 2 or 3 month period of release. Now, the 9/11 attacks was a... basically, it was a few hours of the intense tipping point data collation, and then we slipped into a week-long release period. So the effects of what we're looking at is considerable and much larger than what we had seen for 9/11. Under the circumstances, of course, that instantly makes your mind think nuclear war, et cetera. But it appears to be U.S.-centric. And then at this point, as near as we can tell, it spreads out around the planet from a U.S. kind of a spark or initiation. Might be a false flag attack or something along those lines.
What about the November elections?
November 2nd.
Okay. Yeah, and those would be it would work if the elections were called or canceled after the effect. We're talking a big tipping point, something that, again, alters life as we know it. As screwy as it sounds, as weird as life is and is going to be in the early November, it will be very much different after November 11th.
But you have no idea what it could be? I mean, could it be an asteroid that smashes into the planet?
I doubt that kind of thing, because we're going to have release language that's going to be of a continuing intensity in terms of how fast it sheds emotional tension. So... And this is my monkey mind, and this is where we start getting into the area of potential errors, so I'll let you know that right off. If we were going to see something like an asteroid, I presume we would see a mega-release drop. And while we have a large release drop after the tipping point, it's not as severe as I would presuppose that something like a city-killer asteroid would cause. Does that make sense?
If, let's say, a group of astronomers... chat amongst each other about the possibility that an asteroid that they have found that we don't know about is coming our way and could hit within the next few months. Would you be able to pick that up?
Yes. If it was in a position to where the language itself had in some way leaked out into a public forum or a forum that allowed registration. We sweep lots of things. So if they're out there chatting about it, we don't do emails. Occasionally, we might catch an email, for instance, if it was quoted in a forum.
It depends on where
they're chatting about it. However, would we pick it up in terms of a psychic impression coming? I just don't know. there's so much we don't know about this work, I just couldn't say.
The other problem that comes along with the November tipping point is, in the case of 9/11, we had tipping point, we had the week the skies were shut down, and then sort of life got back to usual. The problem we've got, we could talk about it now, I guess, is something that Cliff has labeled the gap, which frankly has us both, I won't say freaked out, but scared, worried, concerned, and planning.
Is this the data gap you're talking about?
Correct. Yeah.
All right. What is this?
Well, let's first say that we considered our emotional data, which drives the temporal impact of the data, in three very distinct categories. What we call immediacy data, which has an effectiveness from the minute we see the data in the model space out to about 3 days at its peak and then trailing off to about 3 weeks. And then we have short-term data, which picks up at the end of the third week and goes out to about the end of the fourth month, maybe a little bit longer. And then we have the long-term data, which is from the fourth month onward. And there's various levels of granularity. We get a lot more data points for the immediacy, slightly less for short-term, slightly less for long-term, trailing off. And the long-term data is split into three sections itself. And about 2003, I think it was, started noticing that there was a hole, if you will, in our model space relative to a period of time from early 2012 until about May of 2013. Didn't concern me because at that point I was much more focused on the immediate kind of things. But as we've moved forward in time towards 2012, the hole in the data has not extended away from us. In other words, in 2003, the hole in the data was 9 years out. Well, as here it is in 2010, and the hole in the data is 2 years out. So it's been moving upward through our data types as we've been moving those data types forward in time.
I see.
And we don't really understand why that data gap occurs. There could be any number of explanations for it, but it is worrisome.
Can you ascertain if there's a shadow government out there somewhere?
Oh, certainly, certainly. That is, I know beyond a shadow of a doubt, and I can give you an exact linguistic example of how I know this. There were certain government contracts that were posted a few years back, made available in Freedom of Information Act thing, and they just kind of had them posted out on the internet and swept them, and I used them in relative to the sweeping the site for the Council on Foreign Relations in order to get a base linguistic set for what I called the powers that be. And just recently I've encountered a very curious thing that I didn't notice initially, that in 1956 the language made a very distinct change from, let me see if I can put this right way, exploration of what you and I would think of as the hidden kind of technology involved in UFOs and so forth.
Right.
And after 1956, the language in the federally released contract documents changed to exploitation. So they had their success in 1956. From that point on, they've been able to engineer and do stuff on their own, and they've been exploiting the technology, and it just got larger and larger and larger. And then, of course, I started recently reading Richard Dolan's books, and that really confirms it.
Are you getting more and more chatter of this push for one world government, for control?
That's a curious kind of a thing, because there's certainly more push towards control, but from the viewpoint of the linguistics, bearing in mind, of course, that we can't tell between a headline that gets it wrong and the occurrence itself, because we're sort of looking really at the headlines of newspapers through a blurry screen several days out. And if the writer of the report for the headline got it wrong, then we'll get it wrong. But given that, I think the push towards a one-world government is rather spurious. And it's one of those distraction memes that they run to keep everybody running around chasing an illusionary ghost.
By the way, that around this 1956 date, don't forget that back in 1961, President Eisenhower gave his famous speech on the military-industrial complex. And so whatever was going on drove a sitting U.S. president to come out and say some really startling things. And that means that if you look back in that 56, 57 era, something really did likely change. Now, whether it's reverse engineering Roswell or however, you know.
I still maintain it was some kind of a brilliant success that occurred in the early days of February, maybe into March, because that's when the language radically changed.
And that's when U.S. foreign policy, I mean, there's a whole lot of stuff that started changing in the early 60s.
Absolutely.
And the veils of secrecy really came down.
And see, I'm actually of the opinion now, as goofy as it sounds, I say I have to agree with the smart thinkers that are actually schooled and lettered, like Richard Sauder and Mr. Dolan and others, who are of the opinion that there's a breakaway civilization. And I agree with that. And I believe that the civilization from the viewpoint of the shadow government part of the U.S. got its real impetus in 1956 and onward. So they've had a number of decades to get it all together. And I think they've either achieved Type 1 status or they're about to. Type 1 status would be the ability to be interplanetary in our solar system.
What do you think of the Kennedy assassination? And are old events too old to affect what you're doing today?
No, because things like that are continuing memes that are constantly reoccurring, and in fact, they're within our data. Every time we do a sweep, we'll find new areas discussing that kind of thing, and there's been a huge growth in that particular meme since about, let's say, 98, and we're seeing maybe a 10,000 to or larger percent increase since I originally encountered that data stream in 98.
So, part of that, George, is just the general public is waking up that conspiracy theories are only called theories by people who don't want you necessarily thinking about this stuff.
That's true. That's absolutely true. So in theory, we could use your work for going into all kinds of things like that.
Yes. Basically, our work is actually based on an ancient Roman technique called SCED. At the time, it was SCED, and it's the language used betrays the domain of the speaker, and it's a way you could ascertain as a debater how to approach and attack your opponent. Bearing in mind that in Roman times, this was really very pertinent because it was whoever was the better speaker that was elected to their Senate pretty much that day, kind of a deal. So indeed, we can. We can approach things and analyze them linguistically and build the model around even past events if we have enough data in it, yes.
And SCED, by the way, George, is easily remember as subject knowledge elucidates domain.
Perfect. How can people use this in their everyday life to better themselves?
Put in garden, build boat. Move to high ground.
or do you actually mean use the technology itself?
The technology.
That's really difficult at the moment. I've had a number of people offer to buy the stuff from me, and one guy wanted to buy it and try and encapsulate it in a PC sort of a program.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is the amount of bandwidth required to do it. My poor assistant here, Igor, has to have a special refrigerator in the room of his barn because there's so much excess heat kicked out by the servers, and we run a huge electricity bill every month. So it's not something you can. It's one of these things where, you know, better off not doing it at home.
Yeah, exactly. Folks, don't do this at home. Probably. When we come back, let's talk about some of the work that you're doing with halfpasthuman.com and explain what that all means. Our two special guests tonight, George Ure, Cliff High, WebBot Technology. Their websites are all linked up right now at coasttocoastam.com. If you want to email me, george@coasttocoastam.com. I kind of like that word, Coast to Coast AM. I think we'll keep that for a long time. We'll be back.